Welcome to this Property Life podcast with me, Caroline Claydon. I'm a property investor and I'm joined this week from Jordan, who is going to give us a rundown on all the activities he's been up to in his property business over the last couple of months or so. It's been an active, active time for us PWSers, hasn't it, Jordan? How are you doing? It
certainly has been, yeah. Been foot to the floor and grafting as hard as we can, taking opportunities that are out in the market at the moment, for sure.
It's a really exciting time, and it's hard for people to understand how much opportunities out there when you read the media, right? And it's like recessions and budgets and you know, general elections and interest rates. But I would have to say, as a PWS team, we're doing more deals now than we've probably collectively than we've all done like in the last maybe couple of years, right?
It's been the scarcity of everyone else and the market being a bit wavy and a bit fluctuant is actually to our advantage, because that's obviously what we thrive on the best, because we know how to combat those highs and lows, and whereas the general public and the average amateur investors don't quite have the same knowledge that we do.
Yeah. Now, there's talk even that's just come out this morning that the Jeremy Hunt in the budget's going to go after the serviced accommodation, the second homeowners. It's just easy pickings for him. So once again, we're going to see an influx of people getting out of that market because they might have just been doing it as a little bit of a sideline. But it's not going to affect any of us because we've gone the kind of bar above that, if you like. So again, more uncertainty is going to cause more opportunities for us that know what we're doing. So, Jordan,
yes,
a lot has happened. I mean, obviously, personally, you've got engaged to be married, which, you know, that's a whole podcast episode in itself.
Indeed.
But today we will focus on your property stuff. So you've just finished a deal that was really exciting. And I think you started talking to me about this maybe in was it autumn of last year? When did you first see it?
I didn't see it till May, June of 2023.
Right. Okay.
And then purchased it in July. Purchased it end of June 2023. Yeah. So it was a quick turnaround on that one. But I'd always been, my goal for 2023 was flip. I just wanted to get as much money in the bank because obviously, as you said, I've engaged, so I needed to cover the cost of a ring, cover the cost of a wedding, honeymoon, everything else. So it's kind of that priority to basically fill my pockets as much as I can with a lump sum of cash. So that was kind of the target and goal to get just a couple of flips under the belt to kind of bolster that pot up, because obviously I've just used every pot I have. I always just put it straight back into the deals, put it back into my buy to let. So this was the game plan.
So a couple of flips was the goal of 2023. Did you have a monetary goal that you were aiming for, or was?
I was aiming at least trying to get at least 40 grand across from the flips. So I was trying to aim, if it was two flips at least, because obviously just with the turnaround and I had other things on, we're starting up or doing another side business as well with staging. So it was kind of that I wanted just balance between everything. So yeah, two flips at least, bringing at least 40 grand in was my target.
Oh, the target. All right. So let's talk about this property here. Whereabouts was it? Because it's not on your doorstep.
No, it's not. It's an hour's drive from literally where I live. So it's in a place, a little village called Errol. So in between Perth and Dundee. So it's close to where I invest as my actual one of my main investment pots of areas. It was close enough by that it was still on passing to where I'd normally be traveling to.
And how did you find it?
So it actually came through a contact of mine. So I have, I've used in the past sourcing agents and people within the industry who are actively always looking. Mm-hmm. He basically was traveling past this property a lot and managed to kind of secure it. And I've worked with him in the past, so we've got a good relationship with obviously passing on deals, and I'd obviously bring him the business back to him. So yeah, he kind of found the property for me. Off market, the property had been derelict and empty for over 5 years. The gentleman had, unfortunately, it was a family that used to live there. They then unfortunately divorced. Well, the kids grew up, moved out the house, then the husband and wife divorced, and then wife was living there for still a number of years, and then it got to a point where it was in pretty bad condition. She didn't do anything about it. So then she moved out, and then it literally been sitting there for 5 years. And obviously all the neighbours in the local community were a little bit disgruntled, because it's quite a nice little quaint village. And you had this one eyesore, which was basically like the Addams Family haunted house. It's quite the easiest way to describe it.
So the first red flag that you've just said that worries me is village. We don't tend to do investing in villages purely to a supply demand population level. So what was it about this location that gave you the confidence that there was appetite or enough population that would be interested in buying it?
Yeah, so it's only a 10 to 15 minute drive tops into the major city of Dundee or to Perth. So it is within a 10-15 minute drive maximum to get to either of those main cities. So that's where, normally like yourself, I wouldn't really look in the outskirts too far because of that potential demand option. But because of it being the amount of land that you can get available for the price you're buying it for, it was just one of those areas which is always up and coming. And again, using my contacts who was in the estate agency trade, he then obviously had a lot of knowledge about that local area. So I kind of took a bit of wording from him, but also just looking at the comparables to see that there was a lot of demand but minimal supply, because these properties don't come up ever. This is the that was the golden egg and the goose that kind of attracted me to it more than anything, was properties on there, when they come up, they're gone within literally a couple of weeks maximum. They do not hang around. So this is where I was very confident in knowing it's only a 10-minute drive, 15 minutes to get into the main city. Okay. And obviously the demand was of a good nature.
Brilliant. Okay, because I think a lot of our listeners who are maybe just starting out, the idea of investing somewhere where they've never been before or don't know very well might scare them, but you've leveraged off other people's knowledge, and you know the two hubs, if you like, that are commutable. So that's a real positive. But the fact that, you know, stock moves quickly is a real plus. Okay, so it was off market. It'd been lying empty for 5 years. A contact brought it to you. So it wasn't on the open market?
Not at all.
Okay.
Nobody had seen it. Everyone had inquired about it. No one knew even who lived there. So it was a bit of digging and a bit of investigating work to uncover the gentleman who was registered under the name. And yeah, I had to go quite creatively through a couple of means and sources to manage to find who this guy was, because people have been wanting to buy this for years and years and asking all the neighbors. So he ended up doing a bit of investigating work and managing to find the contact through countless letters, and found him through a society that he works for. So he was a beekeeper. So he actually found him through the Beekeeper Society of Scotland and managed to actually find his details and where he was living now at that point, and then managed to direct his focus there to try and get him over the line, which it worked. And then managed to then arrange a meeting for me to go and meet the owner at the property and do a full kind of scout out and viewing to start the ball rolling, really.
Brilliant. Okay, so when you viewed it, what were you looking for? I mean, the fact that it's distressed, that's a tick for us straight away.
Definitely.
What other, was there anything else about it that was a positive that you were quite excited about, or was it just the fact it's off market?
A couple of things. So off market, so I knew I had a bit of negotiation there because it had been left out for so long. There wasn't a mortgage for him to clear, so it meant that it was a very simple kind of, I know he doesn't need to get rid of a debt that is already sitting on the property, it's already gone. So it made a little bit easier in the communication. Also the fact that there was so much land that was available. So it was and this is where, again, having a bit more experience from compared to maybe some other people starting up, I was looking at this as potentially splitting the land and putting another house on the back and building another house on the back, because it was big enough to build another house. It was, I think we're looking around about 28 by 25 meters squared of a garden. So it was quite a vast space. But the main draw to me was it's a family home. Like down that whole area, there was still a lot of other families with trampolines, with play parks in the back gardens of the house. So it just meant that even though there was access that I could create on the around the back of the building to through a bit of farmland, I could be able to create a second entry system. But it was just going to be more, it's a family home, and that was the demand. That's where it would need to be. So that was kind of my main focus. And obviously speaking to neighbours, speaking to the public, it made sense that it was very much a place for a family, because there's a school only 4 minutes down the road as the main primary school for obviously a lot of the locals. So that was a big plus and bonus for me. So yeah, looking at something that I could turn from a shithole, as we like to call them, really, into something which was a nice, beautiful swan, and having that amount of scope to kind of create for someone else to build on top of that if they wanted to.
Right. So we could have maybe split off the title, still provided a really nice family home, but maybe the garden would have been compromised slightly.
Yeah.
But so good decisions to be made, weighing up what priorities are, because the time scales that it would have taken to get planning.
Yes, that's
to then building it.
That was another factor. This was for me, any flip I've ever done in my property career has always been quick in and out. I'm not wanting to sit on it, hold it for long, long periods of time. So I didn't even do planning to take down a wall, which would have worked in the property to convert it and make a big open plan, kitchen, living, dining. But again, the time scale for planning, it was just not worth the fact of doing that. So yeah, in and out job, trying to move it as quick as we can.
Lovely. Okay. So you saw it, liked it, met the vendor. He does not have any lending on it. What was his position of pain then? Did he have any position of pain that you could actually solve?
The only position of pain was his ex-wife. And that was the position of pain. She was kind of narking in his ear and kind of wanting to get rid of it because she wanted some money.
Ah.
So she wanted a bit of money. So he, like, it didn't uncover that for quite a while. I have to admit, it was it took a bit of time to uncover, just knowing that his wife was still in the picture and wanting something out of it. But yeah, he didn't come across. He was quite an introverted individual, so it was quite hard to extract a lot of information out of him at the very beginning. So I had to be quite quiet and quite tactical with my conversations of how I was playing it, with putting on my amiable hat rather than having a driver hat on, just so I didn't go in there like a bull in a china shop. So yeah, I was very much he was just thinking, right, I'll get rid now. So he'd moved on, he'd got another place and stuff. So it was just this big old building that it was left derelict, and kids have all moved out. He knows he's never going to go back there. So it was just that fact of, he knew it was too far gone for him to go in and renovate. So it needed to be someone that was doing it for either their own home or a development.
So did he have a number in mind of what he wanted for it?
Yes, he did. He had a number in mind, and obviously I had my number in mind, which were quite different and polar opposites, I have to admit.
Right. Tell us the numbers, Jordan. What did he want?
So he was wanting, well, he actually didn't show his cards for quite a while. So he asked me, what am I offering?
Oh.
And then that's where it went. And I was like, what would you like for it? And he just literally would not budge and say, tell me what your number is and I'll come back to you on that. So I initially went in at 140, 138 to 140, I think it was, around about that figure. So I went in then, knowing that the comparables I'd seen, I was looking at about 275 to maximum 300 was kind of my, that would be my sweetener, cherry on top, 300,000. So yeah, went in at 140. He rejected that. He then said, I'm wanting, I think it was 165 he was looking at as a minimum. And right, then we kind of met in the middle and then end up. So it was a very quick negotiation, because again, I didn't want anyone else to jump on the fact that he's now in conversation, he could give it to someone else. So we met in the middle at 153, and that was where we kind of met, which the numbers still worked for me, and I was still happy with what profit margin would be coming from that.
And did you know at that point how much you'd have to spend on it?
Yeah, I had a rough idea. I already had my builder come out to have a look at it, but having just the experience of knowing, it wasn't anything structural, it was literally all cosmetic. There was a few underlying things with some woodworm and having to treat some of the timber and doing some damp-proof coursework. But apart from that, it was quite a basic project in reality. It was just a larger scale project of that nature.
How many bedrooms did it have?
It's four bedrooms. So four bedrooms with, four bedrooms upstairs, and then you had downstairs living room. You had a separate dining room, separate kitchen, bathroom suite, and then into the garden at the back, which was pretty much a jungle. The garden, when I went there, I'm 6'1", and those bramble bushes as thick as my wrist and as tall as me. It was just a jungle. You couldn't see anything. I didn't even realize it was the back of the house. You couldn't even see that. It would overgrown so much that you literally were like, I'm buying something without actually knowing what else is out there. It could have been anything.
You could have maybe positioned it as a nature reserve, Jordan.
It could have been done.
Family home with nature reserve and wildlife park at the back.
Vera next door wasn't as pleased with all the beasties and creatures that she was having to deal with in her garden, I have to admit.
I bet. Okay, so you purchased it in July, did you say?
End of June.
All right, so give us a walkthrough of builders in, turnaround, cost refurb.
So overall, bought it end of June, and again, I've used this my head builder for probably about 15, 16 projects already from other previous works I've done in just up Dundee way from my purchases there. So we've got a good relationship working together. So it kind of is easy enough to talk through what I want, hand in the keys, and he can crack on. So we had a rip out happening literally, I think it was 2 days after I got the keys. Skips are in the driveway and we're ripping out the house straight away. So we had already kind of re-measured up the kitchen. So I'd already got that in process as well. And we're having to replace every single window. There was 27 windows that we had to replace, all from single glazed sash and case, or single glazed that just, there was half of the windows weren't even there in the woodwork. It was just rotted. So we had to replace every window in the whole property, double glazing. So went in straight away, got all the major things ordered up and were in process. And then we kind of sped along quite quickly, and it was going very, very smoothly for a period of time. But as we know, property doesn't always go as we plan it to be, with even with contingency. So got to the point of the Sparky and plumber, and the time scale was just taking a little bit longer for that, and same within the decorator. So we got to a point where joiner did all he had to do, roofer did all he had to do, and then it was just waiting on these last two individuals to kind of get the main crux of it done. So timescales did extend a little bit more than I was expecting, and we ended up turning it took just under 6 months for the whole property to be turned around, which when we first sat down and went through the schedule of works and the plan, it was only meant to be 3. So it was a little bit more extended. Yeah. Wow. 3 to 4 is a maximum with a bit of contingency in there, but it did extend just because, again, the trades, because we're contracting some of them in, they were then focusing on other jobs as well. And then they would come to my work for a day and that would be it in the whole week. And like, that's not going to get the progress. So it was very frustrating. Obviously, I was only dealing with my head builder, so then he was getting it thick in the ear, which then he was then having to tell his contractors about it all. So it did go on a bit more, but we did did damp proof works in the upstairs where the chimney stacks were, and downstairs we put brand new double glazing throughout the whole of the property. I said 27 windows, new front door, back door, new brand new kitchen, electric throughout, gas center heating, and then bathroom suite. We added a new WC upstairs because there was a space that we could, because there wasn't anything upstairs. So new WC upstairs, and then decoration and carpet. And that was, and then obviously the garden as well as an external work and painting. So that was kind of the full crux of it. So I've had a lot worse properties to be dealing with, I have to admit, with doing my HMOs and doing conversions. That's obviously a bit bigger with structural work. So this was quite a nice, simple project, but it was just then relying on other people, which is obviously the most frustrating part of property investing.
Yeah. Okay. So it took 6 months. So you're around about Christmas time if you've started early July, possibly the worst time to be putting a property on the market. However, when did you first list it?
I listed it on the 22nd of December.
A wee Christmas gift to yourself.
Yeah, And this is, and like you said, it's from what everyone says in estate agents, they always say it's the worst time to ever put properties on the market. However, this was when it, and I was always trying to look a bit outside the box on this, and I thought there was physically nothing else in this prop in this area at all coming on. I'd spoken to a neighbor and they were thinking they were going to put their property on because they want to move closer to Dundee. So I thought, right, I need to get this on the market before Christmas, because yes, the agents say it's the worst time because no one buys, but it's the best time also because people don't have other things to do, so they'll be looking to look online, so they've got a bit more time on their hands. If the note, if the for sale sign is on the front of the property on the gate, then people are driving past this road all the time and then questioning it and querying about it. So that's where I thought, actually, I needed to just get this on for timescale wise to pay investors back, first of all, but secondly, it just opens up the door of, if every agent has told their other clients that don't put it on in Christmas, wait till first the first week of February, then there's going to be an influx of people coming in that time. So I want to be the only one on the, basically the best person on the street or the best person in the market. So yeah, I put it on. We got home report done on the 21st, and then I literally handed the keys to the agents. Staging was all done on the 20th, Home report came 21st, keys were the agent on the 22nd, and then we had viewings already booked in on the 26th, 7th and 8th.
Wow. People were viewing on Boxing Day?
27th, 28th, 29th. That's it. 27th, 28th, 29th.
Even that, they're just getting out of their turkey coma and they're straight on the house hunt. Okay, so how much did you spend on the refurb?
Total was just under 66,000.
Okay, so you bought for 153, spent 60,000 on the refurbs. You're in for just over 2.5, 10, something like that.
Yeah, just about there.
Okay, and you list it Christmas time, viewing start in between Christmas and New Year. When did you get your first offer?
Literally after the second viewer. Second viewer came in.
And what was it listed on at?
325,000.
Wow. And you'd said that your sweet spot was 300, eh?
Yeah. So when I'd done the comparables, again, worst case scenario, looking at it just a bit conservative, speaking to the agents, what was seen previously was about 275, top end 300. But then there was a couple new builds that were kicking off and specs close by in about half a mile away. And they were actually increased the value-wise. And also because the surveyor came and said, actually, this is probably the best one I've seen for considerable number of years in this area, he then bolstered it up. So, yeah, we end up getting a home report of 325, which, again, that super exceeded what I was expecting in the first instance. So I was quite pleased, I have to admit.
Well, you did pay a little bit more on the purchase price. True. What had you budgeted for the refurb?
So I'd budgeted 70. For the refurb, actually. So I was a bit under refurb. Did LNPG, so I got my kitchen, which should have been 12 grand kitchen for 4,700.
Nice.
Windows came in, all those windows with that was about 7 grand. So a lot of the stuff we managed to get at a really good price, which was bringing it down a little. That was even me bringing in a second paint squad to complete the work. So I had to pay a bit more than what I wanted in decorating, because my first painter let me down and had to basically sack him because he just wasn't showing up. So I had to bring a new squad in. But yeah, so all in all, refurb 66 and home report came to 325.
Not bad. How did you finance this deal?
All through private investors and a little bit of my own money for refurb. But yeah, everything. I basically had it was about 210,000 all came from private investors' money, from a multitude of... I think 5 different investors are involved in this deal.
Nice. Excellent. What kind of return are you offering at the moment, or did you offer on this particular project? There'll be a range, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, but in average, it's coming up to about 8%. 8% return on the money was what they're getting.
Yeah. Nice. And did you agree to pay them monthly or all at the end?
All at the end. I only just do roll up, just because it's easy for me to kind of manage with other projects happening. But it means the money that's gone into that, as soon as that money gets released, it just goes straight back to the investor. So it makes it for a more simple approach that I like to to kind of manage with it. And they're all happy as well because they weren't needing the money at the time.
Lovely. Okay, so the second viewer made an offer. What was the offer?
Home report 325.
Okay. What did you do at that point?
Went back to the agent and tried to negotiate. they obviously, their second offer in, and I had another 6 viewings lined up for that week, or the next week as well. The buyer was also wanting to have the staging furniture included in their purchase, which they're trying to get a quick buck into the staging. And obviously that's obviously another business of mine, which I do. And I was like, not a chance. That's going to be extra because I put a lot of really nice pieces knowing it's my home. I wanted to make it top drawer. So they tried to negotiate on that. I ended up finding out that the buyer was an estate agent in past life. So they know the tricks of the trade and they know the game already. So that didn't help me too much. So we went back, said, right, if you would increase it by, if you come up to 335, we'll take it off the market. All clients, all other viewings are finished and we'll accept it. They obviously didn't, but they were tapped out. And that's the thing, their 325 was the maximum because they were in subject to sell of their house as well. It made it a bit more of a, right, you need to come up to give me that option, or we just get it sealed now, but you have, and we basically put a clause in that if they did that, they would have to get their property under offer within 5 weeks from when we've accepted it to make sure that it would still go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want that chain to be the killer, right? Because they could offer you 350, but if they've got to sell their property and then that property doesn't sell, then it's worthless, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, a couple other offers came in. We had a number of viewers, some people just coming in saying actually they thought it was a bit closer than that was, and there's another couple individuals saying it was a bit bigger than what they were wanting. So you always have people that are maybe nosy neighbors and just popping in their heads and making up some excuse. But again, when I said at the start, I was in the game to turn it around quickly. I wasn't here to hang around. So I gave it a week, saw what other people come back with. They were still humming and hawing. So I just said, right, let's accept it. So I took their offer at 325.
So the people that needed to sell their house?
Yep.
Wow. Ballsy.
They had already had the agent ready to go to put it on the market. So it wasn't like they were time delayed in that. They were ready to move straight away. Their property that they had, obviously we checked it out, it was at a lower value, so it wasn't going to be too strenuous for people to purchase their property with a certain value that they needed. So it was still a bit of a uncomfortable situation at times, of course, but it was still definitely one that I was the strongest, and they were very desperate to take that property because they'd had 2 extra kids over lockdown and they've kind of outgrown their house, so they needed bigger space. Again, giving it to a family, which was just an extra Brucey bonus for me to know it's going to a good home, but more the fact that they were very, very...
they're emotionally involved.
They're very proactive.
Yeah.
And the husband was in construction. He was already planning what he's going to do with the back garden and having a porta cabin there. They were going to open up the front to make a bigger driveway. So it was, like you said, emotionally involved, which meant that I know it's going to be a strong candidate that shouldn't have any issues to proceed through.
Okay, so and what happened to the furniture pack?
It was removed because I needed to put for another job. So they came back and, you know, they didn't come back and ask anything after. I was like, if they want to speak about it, they can do it at a later date. Never came back, not heard anything from their solicitor. Yeah. So obviously, as soon as the offer came in, I was like, right, I can remove that furniture and I can utilize that into another project.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so how long did it take them to get an offer on the table on their place?
It took, they had theirs under offer in 3.5 weeks.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the 325. So after costs of selling and everything else, what did you get in your pocket?
Total came to just over 80,000.
Not bad.
It was 81 and a bit thousand it was in total. So yeah, just over the 80 grand mark. So
nice. And paying the angels back and everything else, what was your total that you're left with? Or is that...
That's profit. That's profit from the deal. So yeah, paying back the... Basically covering covering the purchase, my LBTT, legal cost, agent fees, my cost of borrowing the money, everything cleared off, even paying myself back the money that I put into the deal to then put back into the bank accounts, walked away with just 81 and a bit thousand as a profit margin. So I couldn't have been too happy about that number coming in when it was from that one deal in 6 months. It wasn't too shabby.
That's not too shabby. Double your target. Well done.
Yeah. Really. And nice. I've still got another flip going through just now, which is gonna add on to that as well. So it's making a bit more
profit. Well, it just means that this wedding's gonna be bigger and snazzier than originally anticipated, right?
So you say that, but then we're looking for a new home as well, so that doesn't help. So it takes that deposit money back down. So I need to get another flip to cover the cost of that.
Oh, all these expenses in life, right? But it's fascinating as a strategy that maybe we'll do another podcast on the flip that you're doing right now. But you know, when the market is slowing down and we are in recession and buyers are really nervous about purchasing, you're flipping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for any new, you know, listeners or students of ours that we're working with, we're saying, you know, gotta be really careful about your exit strategy being, you know, a flip. That secondary exit, talk to me about what secondary exit you had.
So, I obviously look to have a second exit. You've always taught everyone and taught myself to cover your backside as much as we can. So it would be a tougher gig to try and have that as a rental, just due to the fact of the size of what the property was and getting a mortgage for that at the rates they are currently just now. But it would have still been able to cover itself with a bit of profit. I can't remember the total amount, but it wasn't blowing my socks off, but it would still profit out, which is obviously all I would look to achieve, at least to make a couple hundred quid out of it. But again, when I looked at it as a strategy, yes, I could keep it to rent. However, looking at what the profit I've made from the flip wise to then the time scale it would take to generate that same profit from rentals, it was going to take me over 8-9 years or something, 10 years to actually make the same profit I made in 6 months. So it made it quite clear I could go down this route. And again, the supply, the demand was all ticked off from what I needed to achieve, with still the value was slightly under, like the surveyor said, we could have probably gone up to maybe 340, 345 as the home report. However, he said, because of where things are just now, put it at 325, you're just below the next threshold of other properties, which would be there in the market, which gives you that open door for a lot of people which can't afford that next level up. You're at that stage where they'll go. And like I said, it took the second viewer to then put an offer in and obviously take it off the market straight away.
Of course, the 325 is the next bracket up on LBTT, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's to the eight, is it that to the 8% level? Yeah. So that does make a big difference to families who are looking to upsize.
Yeah.
I'm more shocked at the fact that they had two children during lockdown. They obviously
so they had four kids in total. So it was a bit of a tight squeeze for the house that they were in. But they had it as a good house, which that's why when I saw it. And for when I talked about I wanted to put it on before Christmas hit and over that period of time, because as soon as I think it was the second week of January, I was in looking across the market and there was another, I think it came to about 9 properties that hit the market in that period of time from in the village alone.
Wow.
So with theirs being one of them. So it was one of those cases where I'm glad I stuck to my guns and trust my own gut to know everyone else is going to do something different. So I always like to be a shepherd, not a sheep. So I always like to do something a bit different to the norm, because it means that you've got that extra step ahead and you've got that jump start. So they managed to get theirs gone quick, which was good. It was a great house that they had, so I knew there wasn't going to be too much concern. But like I said, we put a clause in to state if they didn't have their property under offer within 5 weeks, then we would be able to go back and put ours on the market again.
Brilliant. Well, it sounds like the demand certainly was there. The due diligence at the front end was really, really important to pull this off. And I know how analytical you are when you look at deals, like you are to the penny and to the pound. And I remember
it was impressing me then, only giving you the rough rounded up figures from today. Then,
but I'm sure we were in a taxi or something, and you were telling me about the deal, and you were telling me about the land it had, and we talked over, and we were thrashing out the pros and cons of splitting off the land and building another one and the rest. And I think it was literally the following week you just said, "Yeah, I've got it. So let's let's just keep it simple and get it gone." So that's brilliant. Nice little 80K in 6 months. Not bad at all. We'll definitely catch up again about the current flip. What stage is that at? Where are we at with that?
So it's actually quite an interesting one. So I bought it off market again, and I've not touched it. I'm putting it back on to sell it straight away without, because I bought it at such a good price that I'm actually able to make a profit from just literally pushing paper.
Nice. Who wants to do it? Others. Who wants to deal with electricians and plumbers?
Top four flat, so I don't want to put my builders through a heart attack on this place. So bought it really cheap off market from a builder. And then it's getting back on the market to sell off market as well. And then gonna hopefully make a little tidy profit on that from just buying it, holding it for a couple months and then selling it again.
Lovely. What do you think the profit will be on that one?
Hopefully 10 grand.
Not bad.
So, from literally doing nothing is the easiest money I probably could make.
Lovely. Oh, well, brilliant. It's great to catch up, Jordan. I'm looking forward to sipping that very expensive champagne at your wedding. Are you bringing it then? your flip has just paid for. But let's catch up again very, very soon. And I hope the listeners have really enjoyed hearing about a flip that's been done in a, let's face it, recession, in a downturn market. And you listed it at Christmas, all the red flags, and in a village, all the red flags of not to do, it still works.
Yeah, indeed. But no, thank you very much for having me, Caroline. Always a pleasure.
Take care, buddy.